All right, massive, massive day in the city of Toronto. Gonna be down on college. Italy, Spain in the afternoon. Whew. And then the nightcapper. Davies, Messi. Team Canada. The Copa. It's happening. Monster game, monster tournament gearing up for the World Cup in 2026. For this country, got a young, loaded roster. Actual promise, actual talent. I know that we were a little down on Canada soccer, but we're back, baby. We're back. We're feeling good. The vibes are back. And it starts tonight, 10-1 dogs against Argentina. Again, I'll be down on college watching this game tonight. Cannot wait. I got Sid Sixero. I taped an interview with him that I'm going to play in a few minutes where, you know, we break down and preview the entire thing. And he gives us what reasonable expectations are, what we should be really looking for, who the pressure is most on, what to expect from a new coaching staff. Well, really a lot of new things top to bottom, but yeah, what we're actually going to get from this iteration of the Canadian men's soccer team. But first, had yesterday off. The fellas were down at the Joe Carter Classic. There's a million celebrities there. So they're like, you know, JD's, people don't need you that bad. Well, all right. Would have felt very strange. Would have done a podcast had the Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup final. Had they actually hoisted the trophy, which I thought was a pretty good possibility. But I mentioned on my last show on Tuesday, looking at the Oilers and where they were after their first win of the series, I thought, this is scary. We did the whole who has the chance of coming back from down 3-0, Mavs or Oilers. We did a whole segment. I asked everybody, and everybody agreed, Oilers, Oilers, Oilers. And I couldn't really fight it. I tried to play devil's advocate for what the Mavericks could look like. And yeah, it played out pretty much exactly like I thought it was going to, which was a blowout, that series was going to be five games. But now that Edmonton team, the way that they're carrying themselves, the way that they looked in game four, and you combined it with game one, and you thought there's a real attitude to them. There was a real swagger to them. Connor McDavid, the greatest player on earth, looks as though he's unlocked something else. It looks as though he's gone up another level from what we're accustomed to, which is, again, the best hockey player on the planet. And that performance that he put on in game five in Florida's arena, I think will be, we'll see what happens with these next couple of games, but that will go down as the McDavid moment for me. Like, he just took over that hockey game in a way that felt very much like, again, a star basketball player. Oh, he's going to the rim again. Oh, he's getting to the rim again. Oh, you just can't stop this guy from getting to the basket because he's dominating you. Yet, like, every time he has the ball, you can't stop him from getting to his spots. And that was it. He was like an ace for a baseball team. We go, oh, you know, we're losing this series, but now we're handing the ball over to our ace. And what does a true ace actually mean? It means that they're the stopper, that they're the guaranteed win night. And that you go to that game thinking, well, it doesn't matter. This guy's on the bump. Roy Halladay is on the mound. They are not going to get any runs. You just need to score two. And that's what Connor McDavid was in that game. 4 points, back-to-back four-point games. It's now at the point where he is a fairly heavy favorite. Like, he's almost minus 200 in some books to win the Conn Smythe on a team that, again, was down 2-0. It's going to be an all-time betting regret for me not grabbing it before game four, just a like tiny little sprinkle on him, because it was, oh, okay, if they do have a path and if I do believe this in any some sort of way, this is the time. Even not grabbing it before the game five, I'm kind of looking at that going, why didn't I do it? But he is now almost a minus 200 favorite to win the Conn Smythe. I don't think that anybody could kind of argue with him winning it if the Panthers are able to close it out on Friday. Like, who's going to push back on it at this point, the way that he's playing hockey games? I don't think that many can. If Bobrovsky steals game five or game seven, and then you go, all right, he stole them two games and was spectacular in another win, that's three of the wins for the winning team, sure. If Barkov scores the game-winning goal and is dominant, maybe. But I, at this point, I really do think it's Connor McDavid's to lose. This is unbelievable what we're watching. Like splitting two defenders with ease, just whipping assists over to guys, bouncing it off of bodies into the net, open cages, because he takes the entire attention of every piece of defending that the other team takes. The Florida Panthers in that game too, every time that they would try to get momentum, every time that they would try to build something and put a couple of shifts together, McDavid would jump over the boards and completely tilt the ice again. Every time you thought, oh, okay, here come the Panthers, they're going to be doing something now, they would score a couple of goals, right? The first one especially, where it's, what, 15 seconds after Edmonton goes up, and they bang one in, you're like, oh, okay. Boom, there's McDavid again, the momentum killer, the ice tilter, the dominant player that just could not stop going to the rack, could not stop putting the Panthers on their heels. And I thought for large portions of that game, the Panthers looked extremely tight. They did not look like a team that had already been to the Stanley Cup final. They looked like a team that was shell-shocked. They couldn't get to the middle of the ice. Bobrovsky was looking a little bit leaky. And there were a ton of Panthers that were basically completely MIA. The one thing that I think you can take from that last game, if you're a Panthers fan, is the giveaway that resulted in the Matthew Tkachuk goal. Because I mentioned it to Versteeg earlier in the week. He was a ghost in the series. He had only had 1 point. Put that in perspective with what Connor McDavid is doing, the fact that we put these two guys up against one another as the two faces of these franchises, like, oh, Tkachuk and McDavid, and who's going to come out on top? McDavid, back-to-back four-point games. Tkachuk felt very, very, very uninvolved, and then they kind of gifted him one. And it was that thing of, again, to make another sports reference, the putting a guy who's having a bad shooting night on the free throw line. Okay, now he's got some gimmies. Now he found the stroke. A golfer that just has not been putting well and then finally gets a nice tap in. That's what you gave Matthew Tkachuk, and I thought that he was more engaged throughout the rest of that game, and then the Panthers started to find themselves a little bit. So we'll see how that carries over into what is going to be like an all-time ticket for an Edmonton Oilers fan, what is going to be hopefully an all-time Canadian atmosphere on Friday night in Edmonton, with the possibility of history on the line, and knowing that you just have this player who is, again, not just the best in the world, but the best in the world that is unlocking a new level, and in his primiest of prime, it's just a different level of confidence that I have in this Oilers team. And I we'll see how I feel tomorrow about it. But after watching that game, who doesn't feel like they're going to do it? It just feels like it's going to happen for them. And now you just have, I think some cups, like I mentioned the NBA finals this year, how it just kind of came and went and it's going to not be a very memorable one. This, obviously the stakes, the chances of coming back down 3-0 and playing this way and compiling this many points in the series, this could end up being one of the most memorable Stanley Cups of our lifetimes. What are you going to put this up against? This is like all-time stakes, the opportunity to bring the cup back to Canada, having Connor McDavid, having him potentially, I think he's 5 points off right now Gretzky's all-time single playoff run point record of 47, because I'm pretty sure McDavid is now sitting at 42. 42 points in a playoff run. They go to 7 games, he could break it. Who's to say that he's not going to finish with 8 more points in this playoff series? Who's to say that he's not going to just like cruise past that number? Again, when I was growing up, as I really missed the Gretzky prime, the one thing that you knew as a hockey fan was, oh, there's these unbreakable records and they all belong to Wayne Gretzky. And this was certainly one of them. 47 points in a playoff run? You're not going to see that again. And here comes Connor McDavid to change that. And I'll say this, poor Matthew Tkachuk got to be spinning out, because the only other time I've seen McDavid play this great was against Calgary, when he put them in a box and just destroyed that franchise. Basically, you know, scorched earth, turned the soil, salted the earth, and forced Goudreau and Tkachuk to basically be looking for greener pastures. And now you've got this thing again where the boogeyman is going to be going home and playing in front of his crowd at his very, very best. And boy, it is just this is the ultimate sports theater that we are going to be getting Friday night. Anyways, hopefully we get that tonight with Canada soccer. I'm praying for a draw. I'm praying for a draw. Just look respectable against Argentina. Just go out there and have a solid performance against the world's best team. Give me the confidence gearing up to 2026. And with that, here's Sid Sixero. Sid.
What's going on, brother?
Sid Sixero. Yes, yes. What's up, man? How we doing? You know, I got to tell you, this is like, there's going to be no mystery with this. It was a taped interview. You know, I only taped the big dogs, right? Like, the last person I taped was Chris Webber. Pretty sure. Like, this is
really
this is big. Yeah, I think, you know, you've had a lot of accomplishments in your career, but getting a taped interview with me, oh, wow. This is a real showing of your standing in the industry. I got to tell you.
Well, the irony is we both bet on that same Final Four he was in. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's not a funny joke.
There's no more funny jokes about sports betting now. Sports betting is
extremely serious.
It's like it's the most serious issue of our times to some people. You're like, okay.
By the way, now the most common, sorry, JD, the most common thing I see now in any news story about this is the following sentence. But no betting on baseball was found. Do you not find that's the common line in all of these stories? But no betting on blank whatever sport we're talking about was found. I'm like, oh, that makes me feel better. That's great.
Can I tell you the dumbest thing about all this is, so whenever we get the controversies like the Jontay Porter stuff, right, or the Shohei stuff, or there was recently one in Major League Baseball, I want to say, with like some minor league-ish guys. I can't even remember because whatever, we're tracking some of these. Or Calvin Ridley was another famous one. People look at this and they're like, wow, the temptations of this have never been greater. It's everywhere, and then you expect these guys to gamble. Or I saw a story the other day of Major League Baseball players, a bunch of them basically complaining, saying they get Instagram threats from people about gambling, and they're like, this never happened before sports gambling. People realize that sports gambling has existed the entire time, right? Like, they know what, like, the Black Sox scandal is. Like, they're aware that since there has been sports, there has been gambling on sports, and that now that it's actually above board and they can track these things and watch everybody through the apps, it's like, We're safer than ever before from these things. Like, no one's put that together. Am I the only one?
No, I'm with you. Like, no one realizes that some guy in Jersey in the 70s had a line on like the Jontay Porter of the 70s. They had that line. Same line. Yeah. No different. Yeah. But some degenerate in Jersey was like, I want to take that New York Knick tonight. Will they get 2 points? I don't know. Let's find out together. Yeah. Let's throw down $300,000 on it. Crazy.
When I see this stuff and these guys are like, yeah, this never happened to us before sports gambling. It's like, fans never got mad at you before sports gambling was legal? Okay. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no, you didn't cost
everyone was
money
so
ever.
Polite about it. Yes.
Yeah, no, sports fans have always been known like for just being so gracious and kind and nice. And before sports gambling, oh my goodness, you should have seen the sporting world. It was incredible. It was unbelievable. It was a real utopia. Anyways, all right. First of all, congrats on your boys because, you know, that was sweaty. You know, I was texting Portuguese buddies going, oh, my God, this is getting sweaty. This is getting scary. You know, this is the time of year where I turn into a soccer fan. It's international play. But no better time for me than when Canada actually plays. So it's Canada Soccer has a new president, new CEO, new manager, and I would say new expectations. What's the goal for Canada in this tournament, and how will you most measure success?
Well, to me, being there is the success because you need the games, period. You need the games. That's why that Trinidad and Tobago final qualifier in front of no one in Frisco, Texas, I forget where the game was, but that was like the biggest Canada soccer game in years because this entire year, barring MLS teams ponying up for some really high-end friendlies a couple of weeks ago, without this experience, to waste 2024 ahead of a World Cup would have been criminal. You were dead. You would have no shot of building a program. You would have no shot of coming out of a group in 2026. Everything would be unrealistic because you need to have your core group out there in environments like this. Never mind just the opposition. The environment. To have Canada in Rotterdam against the Netherlands, to have them in France in a game that kind of France were half interested in winning by the end. These are invaluable experiences. Canada's already won. So I'm not playing the result here. I have to be honest with you. And I haven't, I've rarely said that when it comes to this Canadian team. But the one thing that Jesse Marsh is it's clear he's done, and it'll be cemented to me once we see the lineup tomorrow night in Atlanta. But this is the group. Barring a couple injuries here or there, this is the group. There's two guys on the team 30 and over.
Yeah.
And they're just 15
guys
30 and
25
over.
Or younger.
Like, it is like Crapo and Osorio. That's it.
Yep.
So in 2 years, this is the perfect aged group to build for 2 years together. I still say Eustachio should be the captain. That's just me. Fonzie's going to have enough on his plate. I just let him play. But I got no problem with the decision. With that said, to let this team become a team over the stretch of 2 years is huge. And I think Marsh realizes that. And I was happy that he didn't mess too much with the lineup between the Netherlands game and the France game recently. And you got to build. And I'm all for it. And you let me know, this is a new world to me. I'm not used to Canada hosting anything at the senior men's international level. So the fact that he's already there mentally, it's smart. And whatever happens here, because I don't expect Canada to get out of the group. I think I watched Peru a little bit the other day. That's a beatable team. Chile and Argentina obviously are a different equation. So I think it's a success that they're there. And I am a happy camper. I know I'll complain about something through these games, but right now I'm a happy camper. And honestly, JD, the performance against France has put me in a far better mood than I thought I'd be.
What else? I think Portugal coming back and winning in the dying seconds yesterday also has you in a good mood, because this is the nicest I've ever heard you on the program. You're like, you know what? It's just a pleasure to be here for these guys. It's a young group. I'm going to be super patient with them. They're going to be unbelievable. I just hope they have a great time down there. You know, I just hope that they travel, they bond as a unit. Like, you feel great today.
You just give me some southern drawl out of nowhere. I hear you give me some southern drawl?
You are in a shocking spectacular impression. Spectacular mood. I was actually, so yeah, you're right, man. 15 players that are 25 or younger. So clearly, a lot of this is gearing up for 2026, right? I feel like in the moment, I'd like to see, for me, anyways, I kind of want to feel as though they haven't lost a step from where they were last World Cup. And that maybe they're gaining something, that maybe they're gaining a little traction. They're 49th in the world. Chile's 42, Peru's 32. So you're saying that you think Chile is, you know, should actually be ahead of Peru, that they're the better program?
Oh, yeah. I saw them. Okay. I believe it was it Honduras or El Salvador? There's a ton of Copa America friendlies happening across the States, obviously, right now. And no, it was it was awful. It was an awful game.
Yeah.
And Peru were bad.
So that's the
win of, like, Peru is definitely the winnable game. But the thing, if you think about that last World Cup, like, the ride was amazing and we were all there for it and it was exhilarating and we all got caught up in it. But who did they actually play over that stretch? Honestly.
Qualifying?
And the warm-ups.
Yeah.
Before they got to that World Cup.
Qualifying was the two games, obviously, against Mexico and the States, and that's pretty much
your highest mark. But, like,
that
Mexico and the States. Yeah. Like, they both might get pumped here in this group stage in the Copa.
Yeah. During down cycles, right, for both those programs.
But, like, I'm just saying, this team already, the Netherlands France games alone, coupled with Argentina tomorrow, is the best opposition our senior men's team has seen outside of a World Cup in years.
Yeah. Okay.
In years, this team is already more hardened and calloused than maybe that national team was that went to Qatar. That's what that France game kind of showed me. And I'm here for it. I wasn't expecting to be here, but I'm here. And I don't expect to win tomorrow night, but I don't think they'll be scared. Kylian Mbappe came on as a sub while those guys were tired in the back four. They weren't scared. I don't know. I saw some different things in Bordeaux that night for our Canadian men's national team. I saw some different things. So my mentality has changed a little bit. But I still think this is already a win. It's going to be great just to get these fixtures in. It's just invaluable.
Dude, this is actually fascinating, because you're breaking my North American sports fan brain here, right? You're like, I look at Davies being captain, and I just say, yeah, that's what we do. We make the best player captain, right? He was at the Oilers game the other night. He He's wearing his McDavid jersey. He's like, this is who I relate to, the captain who's the best player. That's a North American move. That's what we do. I'm not thinking about, you know, is Eustáquio the most important player, the most pivotal player, and should he be handling the whatever media requirements there are or captaincy requirements there are. That's like a real soccer guy thought. Same with the friendlies. I'll admit this is I always, again, as a non-long-term soccer fan, I never really know what to make of a friendly. So when I see that they get a draw with France where nobody scores, I go, okay, that's awesome. But I can't watch it. I can't watch it closely. I can watch the highlights. I did see that Mbappe didn't start the game. And I go, okay, so this is something France doesn't take too seriously. And these are just two teams kind of running it out there, kicking it around, having themselves a time. You put a lot of stock in this. You put a lot of stock in these in general.
Yeah, because 90% of the France team that is starting this tournament played in that game against Canada.
Okay, yeah.
And Mbappe, as much as I love the guy, when he used to have a nose, he's still one man, right? Yeah. Like, Eustáquio still has to deal with other guys like Camavinga and Conte. Like, there's France are a unit. And they played most of their guys that night in Bordeaux against Canada. So that's where I'm really drawing more from that. But that's what I'm taking. And now the thing with Davies, because it's valid what you say, best player, captain, it is what it is. Alphonso Davies still till this second does not know what his permanent position is with Soccer Canada.
That's where I was going next.
We can't be doing this where we're trying to figure out his role and make him captain, because he's trying to figure out that role. Like, it's just, I feel like it's not fair to him. And I want him to be free and worry about the one thing. I don't need him worrying about the media veil next week, because he's got to do that anyway. People are going to ask for him. Mm-hmm. I would prefer it if Eustáquio would just take it and go, and we can have Fonzie focus on the other stuff. That's just my angle, because it's not just, you know, oh, he's wearing the armband, so there's extra pressure. We got to find him a position that sticks. And we haven't done that in like 3 years. John Herdman, for all of the praise of John Herdman, it's appalling how many different positions he played Davies in. He couldn't make it work. It was ridiculous. And I would like that to end. And I don't want to put any more added pressure on the kid. So that's, I understand the decision. I'm not ripping the decision. I would have gone it, because with Eustáquio as captain against France, Davies looked different to me than he did against Holland. He looked way different. But again, this one game compared to just another game, and it's not a huge sample size. But either way, Fonzie's walking out there alongside Messi tomorrow night, and that's going to be a moment he'll never forget. He's done that before. We'll see how it goes tomorrow.
That's cool. That's really cool until you, again, going to betting stuff, you realize that Canada's 9-1 dogs in this game. You're like, damn, that's basically what Hungary is. What?
Isn't that a sprinkle? Isn't that a sprinkle? Do you not sprinkle?
Brother, I'm going down to Cafe Dip. I'm going to be amongst the people. Like, I'm sprinkling. I'm
good.
I'm sprinkling. You know, like I'm there to sprinkle. I'm going to be there in the mob, and I'm going to be screaming and hoping and praying like hell that they find a way. If they get a draw in this game, I'll be losing my mind. I'll be having the best of times. Right.
Well, I'm right
like,
there
this
with
is.
You.
Yeah. So okay, just sticking with the Davies thing here for a second though, like. So far, Marsh has done some things right. Like, Jonathan David's taken all the penalties. There's no more confusion about that. He's like, that's your carved role. The whole team, again, you tell me what it means more when they say, we want to be more aggressive. We want to be a more aggressive team, a more attacking club. I go, well, isn't that what they were supposed to be under Herdman? Wasn't that the whole kind of blueprint originally? So I'm not really sure what it's supposed to be under Marsh, how that's supposed to be different. But yeah, that was kind of where I'm going is, what do you think the ideal scenario is for Davies here? And like, do they figure that out during this tournament? Like, is this now the time where that has to be a thing where he does get that role?
Yeah, because if you're lining up for 2 years from now, you got to line it up in every which way. It's right. Not just who's in the 26, who's on that roster. It's where are they and what is the role? Because that's all an athlete. Listen, you've talked to enough athletes. I've talked to enough athletes. What's the one thing they respect the most in a manager or a coach every time? Just shoot it to me straight. Yeah. Tell me my role.
Unless you're
tell me where I stand. Yeah. Well, unless you're one guy. But shoot it to me straight. Tell me where I stand, and at least I'll know. And that's all Jesse March really should be doing here. I still believe, based on the way Jonathan David has played for this program recently, I'm really concerned. He doesn't look like the same player. If you want to get in the weeds on it, why is he still in France? This Arsenal Man U rumor has been out there for 3 years now. Why? Why has no one pulled the trigger on that transfer? I think some clubs know. I think there's a feeling in some European circles, he's put up some big numbers against some bad teams in that league. Because there are moments with Canada, I don't see it. I love him as a player, but there are moments where I'm like, what is happening here?
This was the entire World Cup.
We saw it for three games. It's continued, man. And they're even trying to play him a little deeper as a number 10 role off the striker, a little more in the midfield. And it hasn't worked. And I would argue getting him out of that funk is way more important than finding Davies' the right position. I'll sit on the Davies experiment all day if it means David scoring me a goal every two games. But that's not happening. And I don't know why. It's really strange how he's drifting out of things. And this is Jesse Marsh's biggest responsibility and priority one as manager right now. Fix Jonathan David now. Because I don't understand why he hasn't made this transfer yet. Maybe some clubs know something we don't. I don't think Lille are asking for $70 million. So what's the problem? Sometimes we see the problem. He's just not engaged. We've seen him engaged. Helps Canada get to a tournament. We've seen that. I've seen a lot of the other stuff too. It can't just be on Davies, man. Jonathan David has to wake up now. And if he wants, and listen, never mind the team. Personally, you know how many scouts are going to be at this Copa America? If you want to go to Europe, I suggest a good three games here. Because people are going to be watching. If you want to move throughout Europe, I should say. I'll be watching Jonathan David as closely as Davies, if not more.
Yeah. No, you know what? Like, I hadn't thought about him enough. I'll admit it. Where he felt a little lost in the shuffle. And now I'm looking at that news that he is taking all the penalties. So he's super successful at them, right? Like, he's got an insane rate of scoring on penalties. But do you think part of that, like the statement letting the world know right away, is a little bit more of a buy-in where you're going, hey, like, Davies is our captain, right? Eustáquio's our assistant, or whatever you call it in soccer.
Captain? Like, assistant
okay.
Captain, yeah.
Good. All right. Phew. I was like, oh, damn it. I think I'm a huge casual player. I think it might be called something else. Your other piece of like team news is, hey, this is our guy who takes all the big kicks.
Yeah. Cause you don't want, look, it doesn't happen all the time. Like, there was a team, one of the teams in Italy this year who were like in a relegation fight, which is some of the most dramatic stuff you'll ever see in sports. Yeah. They were in a tight game second last week of the year. And there was like a fight over who would take a penalty.
Yeah.
It's ugly. I talked to someone inside the Canadian camp once about this, about the whole, because remember, I think with Vancouver a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago, there was an issue with a penalty with Davies. And like, that's the whole point of it that you're bringing up. But, and I said, what's the deal with that? And they said, that's some bad juju when that happens in a clubhouse. You don't want that. That's not good. You want to nip that in the bud. Thankfully, Marsh has done that. It's the other stuff with Jonathan David I'm way more preoccupied with. You're right, though. It's a valid thing, and it's not a talking point anymore. It's a smart thing to do. There's so many other questions I have about David.
Okay, so then maybe this is kind of leads into the how do we feel Marsh's presence in this tournament, right? Because part of me goes, well, how much can you expect from this guy strategically? How much can you expect from him tactically in terms of really changing things when he's hitting the ground running here, right? Like, what was he hired? A month ago? Month and a half ago?
I think you and I spoke a month-ish ago, yeah.
The idea that he's going to be taking over, you know, a top 50 international program on planet Earth and be reinventing the wheel with them feels like a bit of a stretch. Again, you're looking for what you said, some strides from your young players, some real feeling of, okay, you're building something towards 2026. But I guess, like, again, this, if we're saying that Jonathan David is the most important piece in all of this, What do you expect from him tactically then? Is this basically where I'm going at with this is this more on Jonathan David, or is this a real measure of how we're going to look at the success of Marsh early on, how he gets him involved and how he uses him?
There are four players to measure early success with Marsh. David is obviously one. The second player is Ishmael Kone.
Okay.
Because Kone...
Now, I can't wait to say this at Cafe Dip. Man, this is
write it down. While you sprinkle, hey, write it down.
We need... I'm going to be such a hard-o. I'll be like, guys, everyone's talking about Davies, but it's Kone is number two. Anyway, keep going.
Sorry, you're a voyager now. Yeah, Ishmael.
I love
Kone. Because honestly, Kone was their best guy on the field in Bordeaux recently against France. He was outstanding. And if he pushes up a bit more, that's support that Jonathan David probably needs. Because right now, that creative number 10 pushing forward, I don't see it yet with this team. If they can get Kone to do that a little bit more, and he has a lot of responsibility already, don't get me wrong, but just a little bit more, it'll help out David too. So David's one, Ishmael Kone is two, and those two central defenders, Bombito and Cornelius. If he can develop a defensive pairing in that part of the field, which matters so much, because you got a goalie, Kripo's good. I think he's on the stage where he might be going to another club soon. I know he's a little older, but he can still make the move. But those two central defenders, if they can play well under Marsh, it changes a lot. Because that's been a real problem for Canada for a while. And in qualifying, it was masked. Kamal Miller had to do a lot of work. He didn't have a partner. And at times, Kamal Miller was a little limited. But Bombito and Cornelius against France shocked me at how well they played. I was shocked. And that was game two under Marsh. If that continues at any level, I'm not saying it's going to continue tomorrow against Argentina, but period. That is progress. That is tangible, short-term progress that you can reach out and touch and say, all right, this feels a little different. This feels more sustainable. This feels like this is something we can really build over the next 2 years. I would say those are the things to watch.
No, oh, that's hot. I like that. That's good. that made me excited. Like this is
dude,
now
you with
a
the
movie.
Dip,
and,
you with the dip yeah. walking around in a fedora yeah. with these notes.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Right. That's right. Just walking out, bumming cigs and like during halftime. Bumming a cig during halftime and dropping these kind of kernels to people going like, I'm going to basically just emulate everything you said there. Go, that's how we build. And people look at me like, this guy knows. This guy's deep. This guy's deep in it.
You're out there with a cig and some guy named Marcello just kind of puts out his cig and goes, this guy knows what he's talking about. Goes back in.
Yeah.
Like that's the moment.
The vibe is going to be very dependent that day, though, on how Italy does, of course, right? Because I'm going right into the heart of it, and they play right before Canada.
Oh, Italy, and Spain, so, three. Oh, you're going for the whole shebang. Oh, that's going to be so good.
Oh, yeah, brother. Oh, yeah. So
it's just, so good.
Yeah, so how that game goes is going to be – it's either going to be an insane party leading into the game, or it's going to be, like, everybody sour. And yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be an awesome day. I'm going to be there all day long.
That's going to be great.
Okay, so I got two more on the team. One is just, do you like the fact that they're starting against the best club? Like, would you have rathered it was, hey, you get, you know, Chile or Peru to start and then you're building up to this? Because this just feels like, again, a lot. You mentioned the France game, so maybe I didn't take enough of that into account. I didn't give that enough credit. Because again, North American sports brain always looks at friendlies like, preseason where I'm like, how hard did you actually play, especially ahead of a tournament like this? But yeah, going into this, having Argentina first right out of the gate matters, doesn't matter. Where are you at with that?
Love it.
Okay.
Absolutely love it. Like when Canada walk out to BMO Field, and it won't be called BMO Field for the tournament, but BMO on that Friday in June in 2026, mm-hmm. the pressure on that game will be four times as much as what they're going to see tomorrow.
It's a great angle.
Tomorrow is a layup compared to the heat they're going to get that first Friday of the World Cup at home. So bring all the smoke, man. I'm fine with it. This is about this Copa America is not about the wins and losses. It's about what you feel and how you feel it. Fear and respect are not the same thing. Respect Argentina. If you fear them, then you're dead in 2 years. We can't have that kind of team tomorrow night. And I don't think we will. So all of these things are great. I nothing will compare to what that atmosphere is going to be like at home in the first game. And guess what? Canada make a run in that tournament. They're not going to be in Canada. Where do you think they're going to be? They're going to be at Jerry's place in Arlington. They're going to be at SoFi. They're going to be at MetLife. And like, that's the atmosphere, this American full house, loud thing. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect. I've never been this positive with you in my life. And I feel strongly about it. I feel so. I feel like I'm disappointing you. Honestly,
no, you're not disappointing me at all. I'm happy for you. Can I say, no, I'm thrilled for you. First of all, I think this is the way that we're supposed to be feeling going into this tournament, because you and I spoke about this during World Cup, is a lot of casuals jumped in during the run, like myself, like a lot of people who are newer to soccer started jumping in on this thing and didn't have a proper calibration of what success means and what you're actually supposed to look for. Because again, North American sports brain, preseason, captain mattering, win or lose, no excuses in between, right? We're living in the parity era in the rest of sports. Like, we got 2 years in a row where an NBA Finals has had a complete loser of a team in the finals, right? Everybody's supposed to be the same now in North America. It's like, that's what we want. And now it's recalibrating to, okay, no, this is international soccer, where there is a divide that our brains can't even comprehend. Like, it is beyond even, like, what? The Charlotte Hornets playing the Denver Nuggets or the Boston Celtics. Like, these are the kinds of gaps that we're talking about here in some of these things. And I think we need that perspective. I think we need a lot of us anyways, not the hardos that are listening to this that are hating my guts as I'm talking about it like this. But I think for many of us anyways, we've got to have that shift in calibration, especially right now with a new manager in 2026, with the sights. That is the main goal. That is the reason that this is such an important tournament. So when this thing does end, is Canada ranked higher or lower than 49th?
I think maybe a touch lower. I don't think they're getting out of the
group. I was going to say, that's my goal. That's how I'm measuring a win. If they finish this tournament 48, I'm like, hell yeah, brother, let's go. We're jumping up. We're moving on up. That's it. I need something tactile, you know, tangible, something that I can like grab onto as a measure of success. I need it. My North American sports brain won't allow me to think any other way.
No, it's a weird tournament that way because the expectations are, if you're being realistic about it, they are what they are, but they're actually very similar to the World Cup in that note. Like, Canada had two games in the World Cup that people thought there's no chance they could win. I always thought they could beat Belgium, and they should have. But there were two games.
Especially since everybody
really
beats Belgium. Like, Belgium lost again. It's like everyone beats them. They're like, we got to. I texted Devang. I was like, give me your sleeper picks to bet on. And he's like, oh, I can't quit Belgium. I'm like, you mean the guys that Canada was like neck and neck with?
Nearly beat. Went, yes.
Yeah, and he's like, oh no, they got a new manager. They're gonna figure it all out. I watched that game. I was like, those look the exact same to me.
Yep. One of the worst teams in the tournament so far, hands down.
So,
have you seen the video of Romelu Lukaku training that's going around right now? Just murdering.
So thanks, Devang. Thanks.
Oh, like just terrible. But like this tournament has a similar feel. I'll put you this way.
Yeah.
I want Peru's ass. I want to beat Peru.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want Peru.
Me too. Hell yeah.
Chile have a solid base in Argentina. I want Peru. I saw a team recently. It was a clown show. There was no intensity, and I didn't see any creativeness going forward. We can take Peru. Past that, everything's gravy for me. That's how I'm looking at it.
Okay. All right. Okay, last one. You've been generous with the time. So obviously I'm locked in on the Euro right now. I'm watching these games, and Belgium aside, right? The good teams look like the best teams. And every time you prepare for a tournament like this, you go, and especially for me who looks at it through gambling angles, right? Where I go, okay, let me try to find value. Let me try to find value. And I get people who go, oh, this Hungary team is supposed to be pretty good this time around. I'm like, oh, nice. You know, like, that's cool. Like, maybe again, a little sprinkle on them to come out of their group or whatever. It's like, everybody's got their dark horse teams. I'm like, right on. And I'm watching these games, and I wanted to ask you this, and maybe this is too difficult a question. Maybe it's just year over year, it's different, but the powerhouses feel so powerful to start this tournament. And I wonder, like, with a sport like soccer, and as it grows, and I think you as a Canadian soccer fan kind of have to have this feeling of, okay, well, if you can get your act together and you can use your resources properly and you can have a golden generation, like maybe someday you can have success at one of these tournaments. But do you think the gap between the world's greatest teams and the worst teams is growing or shrinking?
I think it's always been shrinking.
Okay, so it is. All right.
Yeah, I think it's always been shrinking because, like, you again, we're not that far removed from Morocco being in a World Cup semifinal.
Right,
now, I know they got there under an intense defensive premise.
Yeah.
But they beat Spain and Portugal. Like, they hung in there with them. And if that's the conversation we're having in terms of the level and the gap between, it ain't much. And the one thing about the Euro that always kind of cracks me up, because it's getting, you can see it more and more in the Euro. I know the favorites have looked really strong for the most part. Mm-hmm. But I still think you're going to see it. Like, Albania, last check, and I know we're taping this, was up on Croatia.
Yeah, I saw that, like, was 1-0 when I...
Yes, 1-0.
Yeah.
But you can't, like... There are less and less secrets at this Euro with each passing tournament. Most, like, 85% of these rosters are in the top five leagues in Europe. Mm. At least. And then the sub-leagues... There's like, and then you're in like Holland, and you're in, you know, you can go around the horn here a little bit. Like, there's less secrets all the time between these players. They know each other. Like, Portugal's out there against a team with two guys that play West Ham every week. More fans around the world might know Suchek and Soufal over some of the Portuguese roster.
Definitely.
Like, it's just, there's no surprises.
Yeah.
So that's what's made this tournament great for years, is you have no idea what's coming, because the level of competition they're all in is very, very high. You can't always say that about the World Cup, but you can say that about this one. And uh-huh. I think we're gonna get those upsets pretty soon. Slovakia pulled one off already against Belgium. Like, I think you're gonna see more, but I got to give the favorites credit. To wind up this early in a tournament, kind of be on your game, is impressive, because it doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
But it's been a good start to the tournament. It's been a good start.
Also, I respect that you used Morocco as the example and not Greece.
No. I don't know what you're talking about.
Sorry. I just had to. I was like, that's not the example that the casuals use. The casuals would use a different example, but that's okay.
No.
That's fair. Fair enough.
I don't know what you speak of.
That's actually, that one's so crazy that your brain has to go, was that real or was that a dream? It's like, no, that was real. That happened. That happened, bro. Anyway, sorry for that. You were so generous with your time, and then I ended on that. Hey, Sid, thanks as always for the time, brother. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
No problem. Have fun tomorrow, man. Take care.
See you, pal. All right, that was great. Great to have Sid. Great little preview. Gotta say, optimistic Sid, making me feel better about Team Canada's chances today. Making me feel better about, well, not maybe not the chances, but the feeling I'm supposed to have in this tournament, right? I'm going to believe. I think Canada's going to advance. My dumb sports brain is going, why not shock the world, get a draw today against Argentina, score first, park the bus, maybe just pray for a miracle, 10-1, let's go. Beat Peru, draw with Chile. Why not? Why not us? Anyways, I'll see you down on college today. I went to the Jays game yesterday. Very, very, very familiar feeling to a lot of the games I have gone to this year. There were a couple of things of note, though, and particularly the feeling of watching Kevin Gausman right now. That's next. Ruthless, Armin. On today of all days, Toronto down bad after DeRozan jumped on stage with Kendrick Lamar to perform They Not Like Us. Well, he didn't perform. He moved around, but he was still there. It was a tough look for Toronto. Hey, Toronto, you didn't want DeRozan jumping on stage? Give the title back. What would you rather have, 2019 championship or DeRozan dancing on the stage with Kendrick Lamar as a crowd of absolutely eviscerated Drake? Toronto down bad because that happened last night, but also the Blue Jays experience continued. They get swept by a Red Sox team that all year long has been known for one thing, which is they are 500. They are mediocre. They are the epitome of average. And the Toronto Blue Jays, in very Toronto Blue Jays-y fashion, made them look incredible. I watched that rest of wow, what a ball club. Because Toronto just couldn't get really anything going throughout this entire series. But ultimately, it ends with the worst game out of all of them, right? At least Toronto had a shot. At least Toronto was kind of in it. You got Kevin Gausman on the mound on the final game of a homestand. Again, you've got a packed stadium. Tons of people there. Sweltering night. Incredibly hot. Like, so hot. I don't know how many of you spent time outside yesterday in Toronto. How many of you live in Toronto that are listening to this right now? But my God, it was just nonstop sweating the entire night, just sitting there. And it wasn't because I missed my under first five bet by a half run. But watching Kevin Gausman live was tough. He's shown frustrations. He's a guy that doesn't exactly hide it very well in general. But yesterday he was just laboring, and the defense was letting him down, right? It was an error by Barger, and there's a couple moments where guys probably could have picked him up with a play. I think it was only one unearned run, though, that ended up counting against him. But just the Jays tie the ball game. It's 2-2. And he comes out the very next inning and immediately gives up a bomb, his second straight home run. And the way that he was looking and laboring and fighting in between pitches, it looked to me like a guy who was really struggling with where his game is at right now. And he mentioned it in the post game. He talked about it afterwards that he's obviously not happy with where he's at right now, but he thinks he still has his A stuff. He just can't seem to get it. That a lot of this is because of the fastball hasn't been good enough, hasn't been able to set up the splitter the same way. But for a guy that didn't give up a ton of runs yesterday, like, he wasn't brutal. It wasn't an awful performance. It was not great. It's not what you want from the guy that's supposed to be the ace of your staff. But the way he looked was as though he had given up 8-9 runs, that he just couldn't find it. Every single hitter that came up, Gausman looked pissed. Every hit that he gave up, he looked exasperated. And the body language is really difficult. And it was just, if you're doing the cases for blowing up this Blue Jays team, which I think at this point, like, I don't even know how many people are still left on Keep It Together Island. Like, even the most adamant defenders, I think, have kind of come around. But when you're looking at the Gausman trade, I think that there might even be a benefit now of just turning the page, because some of these guys are just sour about what they ended up missing out on. Anyway, subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, and we'll see you tomorrow, hopefully after a Team Canada miracle.